passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock alongside Wei Ting. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. That was an episode of Raw that, with everything that was going on, it felt like an episode of Dynamite with how divided my attention was and trying to figure out what is going on. I mean, if
there are people that, you know, that might be listening to this tomorrow, like in the morning, that will have no idea what we're even talking about.
Yeah, we're going to go off the top and just talk about everything.
What a cage match between Bobby Lashley and Omos. Oh my goodness.
I mean, Akira Tozawa getting served those divorce papers.
Holy shit.
This was a lot. We got to start off right from the top. But the major story tonight is that Sasha Banks and Naomi, not even reportedly. I mean, this is, you know, WWE went to the extent of issuing a statement confirming that they walked out of Raw at some point today. They had been scheduled for a six-pack challenge that was going to headline the show that would also feature Asuka, Becky Lynch, Nikki A.S.H., and Doudrop. And it was Mike Johnson of PW Insider who was the first one that reported that the two had left earlier in the day and just outlining some of the potential issues. On the broadcast itself, it was very interesting to watch how this story was sort of unfolding in real time. For me, like I got a message like around 8:45, and it was just sounds like some chaos tonight. And I was not up to date at Raw. I was still like 25, 30 minutes behind. So I'm listening to this and kind of like piecing it together. And then the segment occurs where they have announced a six-pack challenge. They have not, to my knowledge, they did not advertise this during the day. This was the first I was hearing of this match. And then several segments later, Becky Lynch appears with Adam Pearce and states that she saw Naomi and Sasha Banks walk out of the arena. They're not here. We can't do the six-pack challenge. And it's changed to Becky Lynch versus Asuka, a match that they have been teasing for several weeks and are going to do in the main event in the absence of the six-pack challenge. And that is when kind of the pieces are coming together. And there's been some follow-up reporting from Fightful Select, who had noted that there had been a meeting earlier in the day involving Sasha Banks and with Naomi, that the two of them leave. And then WWE issues a statement. And this was more than I expected. WWE. I did reach out to WWE as well. And I mean, I would say nearly 10 times out of 10 on a story like this, there's no way WWE is commenting on it. But they did put out a pretty lengthy statement. So I'm just going to read from that. When Sasha Banks and Naomi arrived at the arena this afternoon, they were informed of their participation in the main event of tonight's Monday Night Raw. During the broadcast, they walked into WWE Head of Talent Relations John Laurinaitis' office with their suitcases in hand, placed their tag team championship belts on his desk, and walked out. They claimed they weren't respected enough as tag champions, and even though they had 8 hours to rehearse and construct their match, they claimed they were uncomfortable in the ring with two of their opponents, even though they'd had matches with those individuals in the past with no consequence. That paragraph is astounding that WWE put this out. Monday Night Raw is a scripted live TV show whose characters are expected to perform the requirements of their contract. We regret we were unable to deliver, as advertised, tonight's main event. And on the show as well, there was also a line that you might have missed it, but later when they are teeing up the main event, Corey Graves, I want to get the exact wording here, said that earlier tonight, Sasha Banks and Naomi summarily and unprofessionally left the arena, which, I mean, is a Vince McMahon description if I have ever heard one. Summarily and unprofessionally left the arena. I do not even need to guess here that there was extreme anger on the side of WWE. And the fact they went to that length in the press release to talk about specifics that had not been reported yet, that they had issues with two of the people in the match from a skill level, that they were not of a certain skill level that they were in, that they felt uncomfortable with in the ring, is just a level of explanation that WWE just does not openly provide. And that tells me it was coming from, like, it sounded like, listen, this is a live TV day. I am sure that tensions were very high when all of a sudden your main event is, your plans have to be rewritten. The pay-per-view is obviously changing around because now it's going to be Asuka challenging for the title. Sean Ross Sapp did report that Naomi was going to win the match. I've spoken to two people who conveyed the same to me. So it did look like they were going with Bianca Belair and Naomi for Hell in a Cell. And that is obviously not happening. And the larger question will be the futures of Sasha Banks and Naomi. Like, there is going to be, like, this is a pretty significant deal, and I would like to hear their sides as well to all of this. They obviously have not commented on it, but that is a huge part of this story, is their side of it.
We got some tea, John, that we have to dissect and figure out exactly what happened here. This is
I joked about this to someone in the company tonight and literally made the comparison that if you guys just went all out, cameras on, you would blow Drive to Survive out of the water. Like, this would be the most fascinating 1 hour docuseries if they have all the resources that they could do it. They have all the control of their talent. They could put cameras wherever they want. And they could have the most fascinating 10-episode season that comes out. And, I mean, on a weekly basis, you would just get astounding stuff. And tonight being no exception.
It honestly, I don't know if we've had such a notable instance of talents reportedly leaving on a show day since Steve Austin, you know, way back.
Punk.
Was that a show day?
That was the day of Raw, yeah.
Okay, then I stand corrected. Then CM Punk. But I mean, nonetheless, I mean, that itself felt like it was 10 years ago. So,
and that was Austin, their top star. And look at how they responded with that, with the confidential piece. I mean, they were livid. I would imagine it's similar here. It's a developing story.
Yeah, it's wildly fascinating to think about what exactly might have gone on in the back. And I want to reserve judgment until we might possibly hear the other side, because we don't know what it was that, I mean, there are going to be people that'll argue that no matter what you're tasked to do on the show, you do it with a smile and you don't complain. I don't know what the extent of the complaint was. I don't know what led up to the complaint. I would love to hear the other side. I don't know if we'll ever get to hear the other side. But to me, what is the story is the reaction from the WWE and how public they've decided to really, you know, go at this, blowing it up into a bigger story than I think it could have been if they just swept it under the rug, confirming it to the press, confirming it to their audience, and releasing these statements to journalists, which
calling them unprofessional on the air. I mean, that was certainly a decision.
Have we seen them do this to any of the prior walkouts with this level of immediacy?
Not with the immediacy. Like, if you go back and watch that Raw, the Austin one, Punk, they made no reference that night to Punk. With Austin, they came out and it was that Austin had walked out, as I recall. And then it was the next week where they had the whole took his ball and went home. And on Confidential, they really went in on Austin hard, very hard, with Jim Ross involved in that whole thing. But that was not the immediacy of this one. Like, this was just, and listen, I'm going to, again, I am talking about this as more so a larger issue that we always talk about with these talents, that they have so little say in the matter. They have so little power in the grand scheme of things. They do not have a ton of leverage. So when you do, you know, when do you exercise that? It's, you can look at this, and I don't think you can, from the outside looking in, get a clear perspective of what exactly went down tonight. But I always reserve judgment here for talent that are in a company where your leverage is very little, and you are often just expected to go with the flow, go with everything. And at what point do you put your foot down, even if it is going to cause chaos to a live broadcast? But this is, like, this is a story that I imagine is going to get a lot of traction. Like, here it is on the day of the NBCU upfronts. Like, here is a show that is getting $265 million a year. And just hours before your broadcast, your main event, two of your principal performers are walking out. Like, extrapolate this to any other kind of live broadcast. I mean, it is, it sounds like chaos. Like, could you imagine this happening? And I think, like, and you're talking about two very prominent figures in Sasha Banks and Naomi.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there are certain people in the chat room bring up their mental health. And of course, like, this may be contrasting to previous times where these instances may have happened. I think the public awareness of that topic is much greater now than it was before. So absolutely, it is a topic of discussion. Not something I could necessarily personally speak to without knowing the actual circumstances. But, I mean, all that said, it is just really kind of curious to see the WWE's reaction to it, to see the public's reaction to it, because I'm sure this will.
That was a statement fueled by emotion. That was absolutely knee jerk statement that I think would be one that it's like you send out a tweet and you honestly, and then you come back and check Twitter. Like, why did I send that out?
Well, and you're a company doing this. So, I mean, you know, like, how are these bridges going to be repaired after publicly throwing that some of those lines out there like that, you know, specifically mentioning two performers in that ring? And I feel like if we know the experience levels of some of the people that are in there, I have to think that I can't actually imagine who it would be, because everybody's experienced in there. So now everybody's like, the point is, it's going to be left up to speculation now to think about who the two performers.
That was reckless. That was reckless on their part to just throw it out there. Like, two of these other four are considered dangerous. Totally
right. Who are the two? Like, they're all veterans here. We're talking about Doudrop and Nikki Cross and Becky Lynch and Asuka. So anyway, who knows if that is even the actual reason why that happened. But it, to me, it's incredibly telling how public and how much was put into this press release.
Yeah. Also worth noting that Jimmy Uso was there on the show. He was booked to be in a match, and he stayed. So he was there. Mm-hmm. That's like an interesting dynamic to all of this as well, that both husband and wife were on this show. And yeah. Beyond that, I would actually be very surprised if Sasha and Naomi do not comment on this in some way this week. I almost feel they have to, given the way that WWE has couched this and positioned this. And I'm sure we'll want to get their side out, and whatever form that is. I hope if they're comfortable, they take that opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. It's these moments, you know, in professional wrestling that I think really show off how unique of a medium it is. You know, a show where on the night of, performers and characters can just be, you know, removed from the screen for whatever reason, and storylines have to change to, I again wish everybody like is healthy and okay with it all, and I love the two talents that are involved, and I hope they end up like patching things up and continuing their careers. But I have to say, like, as a wrestling fan, like, these are some of the moments of the sport where that I'm the most energized, because I really, we all want to know what exactly is going on. So, you know, the bigger story is, like, how is WWE going to parlay this, if they are going to, in fact, work with Sasha and Naomi again, into something? Because we know that they will.
I mean, history always dictates that eventually the sides come back together. And this is, unless this is just such an untenable infraction that the WWE views that they do not want to repair that bridge. It is obviously there's obviously damage in the immediate aftermath of this decision. And listen, if you are a company that is producing television, and all of a sudden, like, hours before a broadcast, two of your performers leave, like, that is going to generate an emotional response. I know that there is going to be, I think, a lot of sympathy for Sasha Banks and Naomi, but I think there's also going to be a lot that are going to say that, listen, this is, if there were giant issues, like, there is, again, we don't know what all the specifics were. They were obviously at enough of an impasse that Sasha Banks and Naomi felt there was not a resolution to their situation. And they opted to use what leverage they did have, and that was physically leaving the building. Like, in all these years, whenever people talk about the idea of what would it take for the WWE to really strong arm and get a union, The answer is always the day of WrestleMania. Your main eventers get together and state, we will not go out unless there is something given to us. And that would be the ultimate. I mean, there is just, and that's a completely fantasy situation, but that is what we were talking with in terms of the disparity in power that the company possesses over its talent that very, very rarely gets to exude anything. And this was a very public showcase of one, and forced a show to be reshuffled.
It is, though. I would contend that, I mean, this is not necessarily a, you know, what seems to be a matter of financial or even, like, I don't know, contractual sort of maybe disparities or injustice. It seems like it's more creatively based. And as a result, I mean, I'm just really curious internally, like, what the talents might also think of this, because ultimately it resulted in a lot more work for the people that were involved in Becky Lynch and Asuka. And of course, Doudrop and Nikki Cross not getting matches. Like, how do talents view something like this? And, you know, what is sort of the communication backstage about how they're supposed to feel about something like this? Even if somebody publicly might support Naomi and Becky and Sasha Banks, I mean, probably unlikely to speak up about it. But I'm just very curious, you know, maybe non-WWE talents, what they think about it as well.
Yeah, I would guess that just about every talent has probably had that moment of extreme frustration at times. And you're probably also going to get, like, a very vocal contingent that will look at this as you never miss the show. You never walk out, and will have a very pro-company stance. And it will be interesting to see what the divide is among talent, privately and publicly. I think there may be a disparity there as well. So, yeah, this was obviously the prevailing story on Monday night, and we'll continue to discuss. We will get your feedback at the end of the show, and this will work its way through the review on top of that. But before we start off the Raw review, we did want to go over a couple of things coming up on the site this week, beginning with Tuesday night's edition of Rewind Away, where Way and I are going back to 1997 to chat about Shawn Michaels. Someone who certainly had his contentious issues with the WWF over the years. And this was the night of the vacating of the WWF Championship and delivering the promo that was dubbed that he had lost his smile. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this segment, how it was viewed at the time in 1997. I pulled out some excerpts from some different accounts over the years, including Shawn Michaels writing about this in his book. And we will look back at this. And also, how this would be viewed today. I think it would be very different than it was in 1997, but Shawn Michaels was an extremely polarizing figure by this point in 1997, and there were a lot of dynamics at play. So this is a special Thursday edition of Raw, going head-to-head with Seinfeld.
Oh, okay. Wow. That Seinfeld was a juggernaut.
NBC lineup on Thursday nights was just, wow. My God.
Incredible.
They were stacked. Friends, Seinfeld, ER, They weren't messing around at NBC on Thursday nights.
I tell you, you're forgetting Frasier. You kidding me?
I don't know if Frasier was on at least not on this night.
No. Okay. All right then. All right. Well, I look forward to it tomorrow on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Cool.
So you can check that out. And then later on this week, of course, Rewind to Dynamite on Wednesday night. Thursday, Way is going to Jordan Goodman for the Wellness Policy. And this month's topic, comedy.
Yes. We'll just be telling jokes the whole hour and a half. Yeah. No, we'll be talking about comedy and I think, you know, a bit more about like how it plays a role perhaps in our everyday lives, why it's important to maybe look at things on with a comedic lens from time to time, and maybe the culture of comedy and maybe how you know, divided and contentious it can be in certain times, like we've seen publicly with like the Will Smith Chris Rock incident and the Dave Chappelle incident. So it'll be a really interesting topic. I'm looking forward to.
And as well, rounding out the week, we'll have Rewind to SmackDown available for Post Wrestling Cafe members, I guess 10 o'clock again Eastern this Friday night, because Rampage will be the early edition of Rampage once again, followed by SmackDown. We'll have a special edition of the NWA podcast. They are back this weekend, Nate, Chris, and Andrew, a new Postmarks edition featuring Karen Peterson as the guest, WrestleNomics, and for Post Daily News, we have a lot of news to discuss on Tuesday, and we'll also be joined by Mark Polisell, who is the promoter of C4 Wrestling out of Ottawa, Ontario. They just ran a show on Friday, and we're going to have Mark on to discuss some of the success they have had since coming back after the pandemic, and what it's like navigating kind of a post-pandemic independent wrestling company, and a lot of the measures that they have put in place, what the appetite has been for wrestling fans coming back. I think it'll be a very interesting chat with Mark, in addition to all of the news that will be happening on Tuesday. So that's live at 1 Eastern. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Give us a thumbs up as we are on the race to our next milestone.
Yeah. Yeah. Thumbs up, leave a comment, join the discussion, you know, share the shows if you like them.
Okay, the whole schedule is up at postwrestling.com, and we'll now transition to the Raw review at a sold-out Norfolk Scope in Norfolk, Virginia. And they were certain to make mention of the sellout, and this was a pretty engaged crowd, I thought. They really helped in the steel cage match, and it seemed like a lively crowd tonight on Raw. The steel cage match is all set up, and then they put up the countdown to Cody clock. From 8 p.m., we started a two-hour countdown clock that they would constantly reference until Cody himself would speak to the people at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So bringing back last week's experiment, and just the show is built around Cody, literally.
I think we were wondering, were they going to bring back the countdown clock for whatever match that they were going to have at 10 o'clock? It's not a main event countdown clock. It's just strictly a clock for Cody's appearance.
It's the main eventer countdown.
The main eventer countdown clock. I mean, the main eventer was speaking tonight. So it goes on to continue to tell you how much they think about Cody Rhodes.
He's number two behind Roman Reigns in the pecking order. It's very
clear. Don't even have a clock for Roman.
No, Roman's never had a clock. Yeah.
That's right. So, and it shows you how integral he is to their current system.
MVP and Omos are out. The steel cage is set up, and MVP cuts a promo saying that Omos can pin Lashley, he could crush him until he submits, or just escape the cage. And he expects Omos to brutalize him even worse than Backlash. The Almighty Era ends tonight. Lashley makes his entrance, and they fight on the floor, and Lashley gets into the ring, staring down Omos. We come back from break, and the cage match begins. MVP nails Lashley in the eye using his cane from the floor. Omos with the snake eyes, running boot combo that I guess he has become the successor of.
Sure, yeah, maybe he'll start doing some choke slams and what
TED
else?
Talks.
Maybe planches? Even?
Yeah, all
TED Talks, yeah.
MVP reaches in to slap Lashley. Lashley grabs him by the arms and rams him into the post. And then Omos misses a splash and takes a spear for a two count. That was a very nice sequence that they had. Probably the high point of any of their three matches so far. Crowd is with this. They're chanting Bobby. He goes to the Hurt Lock. Omos goes into the corner, but Lashley's out of the way. So Omos just nails himself into the corner, and he kicks Omos off the top turnbuckle when suddenly Cedric Alexander scales the cage, kicking away at Lashley. He's thrown into the ring by Lashley, and there goes Lashley with a cross body, which Omos catches. Dude, it's one thing to catch Cedric. Bobby Lashley coming off for a cross body, and this dude caught him. Sends Lashley into the cage off his shoulders, is toying with him, and then does it again, and Lashley is thrown into the cage. It breaks, a la Paul White throwing Steve Austin into the steel cage, and Lashley lands on the floor, winning the match in 7:33, and the referee explains, it doesn't matter how you get to the floor, he wins. And then Lashley, my favorite part, he points to his head like, this was my plan all along. You would throw me through the chain link fence. The plan came together, and Bobby Lashley wins.
Mm-hmm. It's a finish we've seen before. I don't know when we saw it last, so I'm imagining it's fresh for a new generation. I had no issues with it whatsoever. I mean, my only question is, why did Omos just kind of stand there and marvel at Lashley just kind of laying on this crate, you know, for a
He was admiring
long time.
His strength. Look what I did.
He could have just, once he realized, he could have walked out. You know, I guess he's never seen that Paul White Vince McMahon Steve Austin match, unfortunately. I thought these two did well in the match, much like I thought at WrestleMania Backlash. I think they have very good chemistry together, and they're the type of pairing that, you know, allows Omos to fully use his strengths and to be able to demonstrate his stature, and allows Bobby Lashley to do a whole lot that he's not usually used to, playing a babyface, diving off the top rope. I thought he looked really good here. Omos did, and I think his offense is looking better, as is his cockiness as he's posturing around the ring.
I thought this was like their best performance of the three. I threw out WrestleMania completely. That to me was very, very bad. This to me, like, they had the crowd for this. I thought Lashley looked good in this, and Omos, I mean, yes, we are somewhat looking on a scale here, but the fact this man, like, caught this guy off a crossbody, there were several moments where, I mean, it could have just been the match falls apart, and it did not. And the ending certainly continues the feud. It's kind of a cop out on a cage match. But what do you think this is escalating to?
Oh man,
I cannot see these two doing a Hell in a Cell, for instance.
I can't either. You know,
like, it's got to be, to me, like, like getting the hands on MVP seems to be the big thing that this,
or Cedric.
Yeah, to a lesser extent. To me, it's like MVP is kind of like the mastermind that Lashley eventually gets to, but maybe it's going to be like a handicap situation. Maybe it'll be like 3-on-1.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, we know that I feel like both of them are kind of in a position where they can't necessarily afford clean losses or to lose a full-on feud at the moment, because I think they're both projects. So I can actually see this maybe being the point where they're just kind of leaving off, you know? Bobby Lashley technically gets the win, but Omos is still somewhat protected in the outcome. So maybe they move on from this. But I will say, like, I think the two of them have very good chemistry together, and I can understand the appeal of wanting to keep it going, because they are each other's best opponents, at least thus far, when it comes to, you know, Bobby playing a babyface.
Well, they are doing a segment next week, the Almighty Challenge, that Lashley is going to put Omos and MVP through, whatever that turns out to be. Theory comes out for a match with Mustafa Ali, but Theory says that this isn't going to happen unless there's a referee he can trust, so The Miz is brought out, and then brings up the rankings. It's not fair that Ali lost to Ciampa last week and gets a match with the champion. So he is, makes sense. And therefore, Ali needs to win a match to prove he has championship material. And his new opponent is Veer Mahaan. And Ali got in a bit of offense, but then is steamrolled by Veer. There's a military press. Theory trips Ali from the floor. Miz is still the referee and pretends he did not see it. And then Veer eats a sliding drop kick, and another one sends him off the apron. He goes for a dive, but Miz blocks him as he is counting. They argue. Miz pie faces Ali, and that allows Veer to hit the $1 million arm and apply the cervical clutch, submitting Ali in 2 minutes and 48 seconds. I believe when Ali returned to television, my guesstimate was, let's give this 6 weeks and see where Ali is. And we are right around that time period, and this is where he's at. Theory took a selfie with Veer and Miz, and the clutch was back on. And all of this led to the Mysterios making their big return, attacking Veer. And the Mysterio's standing tall at the end of this segment. So
with Ali nowhere to be seen.
No, like, this you did not come out of this with the idea of a six man. Although I guess you do, the numbers do work out, but that feels like a Raw match, and this feels more like we are going to go back to Veer with the Mysterios, and then whatever is left with Ali, who I think has greatly reduced his. It's like every week I feel he's just been knocked down a peg.
Yeah, yeah. It's at this point in the run where you really have to suspect whether Ali coming back was strictly so that they can continue to beat him every single week, you know, embarrassing him in various ways. And I think the argument every single week will be, look, Ali, we're doing all this so that you can get your comeback. You know, you're building up your heat here, right?
Think about the heat.
It's like, it's been weeks of this, and at this point, it's past the point of like, if he's even pins Austin Theory the next week, it does not make up for the amount of losses that he's suffered every single week against any of these guys. So, you know, the fact that we didn't even have Tommaso Ciampa here suggests to me that we're just going to go through a carousel of various opponents for Ali to lose to until he ultimately maybe gets some sort of rematch against The Miz or Austin Theory. So we'll see. We'll see if next week is a positive or a continued negative for Ali.
Yeah, I mean, all the focus was on Sasha Banks and Naomi, but also, like, just for whatever reason, not on the show tonight, Ciampa, Randy Orton, the Street Profits. Like, there were a fair number that were unaccounted for tonight on Raw. My question to you is, Hell in a Cell is in Chicago. Chicago is Ali's hometown. Will he be on that show? And if he is on that show, is he losing on that show?
I mean, at best, maybe a kickoff match. And yeah, he's definitely losing.
Well, that's when we'll find out. The heat. Yeah. Adam Pearce is with Becky Lynch, and this is when they change the six-pack challenge into the Becky Lynch-Asuka match, which one would have to assume was probably going to be the Hell in a Cell match way, based on where they had been teasing things. Like, last week, you kind of got the impression it could have been a three-way program, but if Belair was going to be with Naomi, that seems like Becky and Asuka got rushed up to here. And now we'll see if they get back to that. But that seems to be the major change for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's an interesting shuffling, and probably the one that, you know, was your only option, because you probably weren't going to do a Doudrop Becky Belair match. You weren't going to do a Nikki Cross Belair match, and you just did Becky Lynch versus Belair. And that rematch, I think, has a lot more, you know, value attached to it than just to throw it out at Hell in a Cell. So it makes sense that maybe we're getting this Asuka match, which leaves Becky without an opponent.
That's right. And the line, yeah, summarily and unprofessionally left the arena. Have you ever summarily done something?
I mean, summarily reviewed this episode of Raw, I guess, later.
All right. Well, summarily, in a summary manner, without the customary formalities. They did not go through the customary formalities before Raw.
Oh, I see. Yes. Okay.
Kevin Patrick, first we go to Riddle and Jimmy Uso. Jay was in Jimmy's corner, so this is a prelude to the title unification match that is advertised for Friday's SmackDown. A good match. They have their rhythm down, I think, in all of these incarnations. At one point, Riddle scales to the top, going for the RKO. It's blocked. Uso splash lands on the knees of Riddle, and then Jay yanks Riddle off of the top behind the referee's back, and then Jay tries to help Jimmy with the cover using his legs for leverage, is caught by the referee and ejected. The crowd goes wild. Yeah, go to the backstage area now. And Jimmy is thrown off. He's confused. You're ejecting my partner? I don't understand this. And Riddle uses a small package to pin the confused Jimmy Uso.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good match, John. I mean, despite maybe you seeming to suggest that this audience should have no reason to be upset about an ejection. I mean, we want a fair fight, you know, John?
It's actually my favorite spot in wrestling is the ejection. Because this crowd, I mean, they see that arm just go and happy. They're so happy when someone gets, like, tossed.
I thought this was a very good match. Great chemistry, as always, between these two teams. If I have any sort of criticism, it's the fact that I feel like I've seen this pairing so much now at this point that by the time that they finally do get to the match, I don't know how big of an appetite I have for it, especially like the draw is to see whether or not they actually go through with the title unification on the Friday.
Do I get fucked on the finish? That's the hook for SmackDown. Get what is advertised?
That's it. Exactly. I mean, the match is going to be good, but I've seen these matches. I've seen these guys have good matches like every single week for like 2 months. And
if it's a DQ, it's going to be like if they do 20 minutes and it's a DQ, it's actually going to make it worse, in my opinion.
Of course. Of course it will be.
And I could see them certainly getting 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way they've advertised this. But you will get a great match. A finish, I guess that's more so a question mark. But Kevin Patrick interviewed Liv Morgan. This was earlier in the day. And she said that Rhea will never get away from this. Los Lotharios come. They want to comfort her. And she says no. She turns down the kiss cam. And AJ Styles and Finn Balor boot them out and state they all have common enemies and they need to work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The three of them. So she's going to think about this.
I don't know what she had to think about because she just came right out. So what the hell?
She should have said, you know, this was done earlier in the day. She could have said the main event is up in the air. I could get booked into a title opportunity. So I don't want to hatch my wagon to you guys when I could have something bigger coming my way after the six pack fell apart.
Yes. Yes. Perhaps. Yeah. She should have just had her bags ready in case she didn't like the offer.
The Judgment Day did a backstage interview. I thought the setting helped this a lot as opposed to being in the ring. I thought that being in the back, I thought that this came off a lot clearer and I thought each had their turn. I thought this was one of Edge's better promos in the character. Priest says they don't take orders. They do what they want and they do it to whomever they want. Ripley has embraced the movement and enjoyed every second of it. She is done trying to be everything you want us to be, and nothing is holding her back, and it is time for complete and utter eradication. And Edge ends it by saying that he travels the country, and some of you are angry. If you're angry, join us and have some meaning in your life. Judgment Day equals power, and more will come, more will join us. Our arms are open for any talent that wants to take their career to the next level. It could even be you, AJ. AJ tries to please everyone else. Edge tried that too, jumping off ladders, and it left him with broken bones and a shortened career. And when his career was done, the fans were gone. So he says, you can either end with them, and this can end with you standing side by side with us or laying at our feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if it made that big of a difference for me, John. I mean,
because Edge didn't have to rely on like the cheap stuff to try and get like boos out of this crowd. He was just talking like with his mission statement as opposed to segueing into, he actually used the term low hanging fruit in this promo, which I have accused him of doing for all of these promos about maybe just he felt there was no team in Norfolk that the national audience would recognize that he could insult. But
true.
I like that he got away from that stuff, even though it's easy heat every time he uses it.
For me, I guess my issue is not as much with, you know, the sort of generic hometown calling out stuff. And maybe just more so the generic feel of the overall types of characters that these are. They're just kind of, you know, one of X amount of dark corporate ministry types of factions that we have at the moment, and
they're all, like the early Dark Order segments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Trying to recruit people that have you know, directionless lives.
Yeah, it's like, you know, sort of generic cult leader and join us. Why? Because we hate the fans and you.
They're angry and fans are awful. I learn that every week. Fans are horrible.
AJ, you tried too hard to cater to the fans, even though for the better part of the past year and a half, you were a heel who didn't give a shit the whole time. I just don't sense that much. I think, like, you know, originality in all of it. And again, it continues to be a little bit disappointing. Again, I love the triplet of Rhea Ripley attached to the two of them, but the content of these promos to me just kind of leaves a bit more to be desired.
Styles and Finn Balor took on Los Lotharios with Liv Morgan in their corner. Balor and Styles, I thought, were great together. Mm-hmm. And Los Lotharios were great opponents for them. They got the heat on AJ after a dropkick on the apron by Angel, and they use a double single leg crab. Balor comes in, avoids the wing clipper, and hits a sling blade. And then Balor is stopped with a super kick as he sets up for the running dropkick. Umberto is in with a moonsault, but Balor blocks with his feet, hits the dropkick to Umberto. And then Styles takes out Angel with the phenomenal forearm, clearing the way for Balor to hit Umberto with the coup de grace for the win. You could have a really thriving tag division in this company if you just put some of these random parts together. And AJ and Finn Balor, I am much more looking forward to these two taking on Edge and Priest than another Styles Edge match. I think this point, I'd like to see the tag version.
Kind of surprised.
These two were great together. This was a really fun TV match.
I mean, as you would expect, you know, you're talking about two of the best wrestlers in the entire company right here. But yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised they haven't, you know, with all the Bullet Club sort of like stoking of those, like, you know, flames, I'm surprised we haven't had this team up until this point. So I'm hoping we get a bit more of a prolonged run with these two, maybe even chasing the tag team championships, you know, as your top babyface team, if eventually Riddle and Orton aren't necessarily a thing anymore. And it looks like now we have Liv Morgan getting inducted into the Bullet Club.
Yeah, because this Bullet Club is for Liv.
Very good. Excellent.
That's Kevin great. Owens is in the back.
Print that shirt.
I'm not.
WWE.
Kevin Owens is with Alpha Academy. The DNA results have come back from the lab with Ezekiel's DNA from the Red Cup that they have cross-examined with a piece of hair from Elias that Gable's been hanging on to. Owens reads the results. They've been contaminated due to barbecue sauce being on the sample. And he looks at Otis and he blames... Otis is blaming Elias for this, and Owens saw Otis eating ribs the week they started this DNA test. Gable brings up the chain of custody, and now he's going to do an ancestry test. Owens just gets livid, and next week Gable says he'll expose Ezekiel, but tonight he's going to beat it out of him. Listen, for these three, I cannot imagine sitting down and going over what your segment is. It's like, okay, you're going to get the DNA results from the mystery lab and just explain that they've been cross-examined with a red cup and hair. And the results, we don't have results. They were, just say they were contaminated. Contaminated with what? I don't know. Fucking barbecue sauce. I don't care. Go. What they made out of this with like almost nothing is remarkable. To the performances, mainly of Owens and Gable, that are just terrific playing off of one another. And Owens can just, anytime he needs to, he can just yell and scream. And it's very entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it. You know, he like Sami Zayn, whose shirt he was actually wearing on this segment, I mean, can seemingly, you know, really make entertainment out of any scenario that they're given. And I mean, the scenario itself I thought was... on the level with everything else we've had in this whole thing. I mean, the feud itself is about whether or not a guy who shaved his beard is another person than who he claims he is. So it all exists in a really kind of ridiculous reality.
This has been like a 6-week feud by this point. 6 weeks they've been going with this.
And it's been entertaining.
Well, it continues.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Alexa Bliss versus Sonya Deville. There was a new theme for Bliss that she came out with. And Deville hit her with a running knee strike. Deville tried to remove the turnbuckle pad, is caught by the referee. So he's tending to the turnbuckle pad while Bliss hits a spine buster. She hits the spine buster to Bliss, who kicks out and then lands a right hand and a DDT, pinning Sonya in 4 minutes. Sonya's pissed and she slaps the referee that they note she is not allowed to do because she is no longer an official. If you're an official, you can assault people. But if you're just a regular talent, that's a crime.
Yes, yes. Pretty basic match, I have to say. Finish wasn't all that imaginative. You know, it was just like her punching, Alexa punching Sonya and then hitting her DDT. 2 weeks in, I feel a little bit disappointed in Alexa Bliss's reintroduction. She feels like she's been lacking in identity. And... It almost feels like without the whole Lily thing, they don't exactly know what she is supposed to be.
Still comes out with it, but they make no reference to it, and it doesn't play, at least after 2 weeks, it's not played any kind of role in her presentation other than, I honestly believe they just want it for the merch at this point.
Well, sure, yeah, fine. I mean, there's a way of incorporating it, like even making mention of what those psychiatrist skits were and how I have Lily here with me, like, after whatever, just like give us some reason. We haven't even heard Alexa Bliss speak yet, you know. Instead, like, she's not even been made the focus of these segments afterwards, everything, you know, in terms of direction, in terms of commentary, has been focused on Sonya Deville. So that after the matches, I mean, camera stays on Sonya Deville. The story is Sonya Deville, and Alexa Bliss really is just more of a background character to Sonya's story. So for somebody, you know, who's as high of a level of a star as Alexa Bliss is, I'm a little bit kind of, you know, perplexed by at how insignificant she's felt in these 2 weeks.
The countdown to Cody comes to a conclusion, and out comes Cody. He says that Seth Rollins is not here, he understands, but hopes that Seth is listening and asks what he did last week. He tried to move on, but he explains, Rollins is trapped in this pandemonium purgatory of his own design and is hell-bent on pulling me in with him. What in God's name is he saying? He is in his own pandemonium purgatory of his own design and is hell-bent on pulling me in.
I mean, he's saying that Rollins' biggest enemy is himself. And, you know, Cody tried to step away after WrestleMania Backlash, and Rollins, because he's so, I guess, deranged and so stuck in his own negativity, he continues to want to drag Cody back in.
Okay, that sounded a lot more clear. But pandemonium purgatory, that's got some alliteration to it.
So here's a question for you. I mean, how much control do you think Cody has over these promos?
This is stuff he did in AEW. This is not, to me, a departure of Cody Rhodes getting all wordy. He has always been very wordy with a lot of his promos. Too wordy sometimes. He goes back to 2012 when Seth Rollins first appeared as a member of the Shield and said he, meaning Cody, was a bitter member of the locker room, watching how successful he was, all the titles he won, and shattering the glass ceiling and proving to skeptics like me that there was a glass ceiling, and won his way to the top. Meanwhile, my story, I did not win. In fact, I lost, and I scratched and I clawed and I painted my face while I was dead inside. But I endured, and you learn a lot from loss, including how to reinvent yourself, and knows I will never be the American dream, so why not embrace the nightmare? Everyone here knows what it's like to get a second chance, and Rollins is trying to deny me my second chance, and you're going to have to kill me to deny it, and I'm going to give you the chance, and suggest they run it back and play it for keeps, Rollins versus Rhodes 3, inside Hell in a Cell. And at this point, I was worried about Cody not physically making it to Hell in a Cell because he was sweating so much that I thought this man was about to melt on my television set.
Yeah, those suits are, you know.
This guy needed a fan, like a portable fan for his address here in the ring. It must have been so damn hot inside of this ring.
I'll bet, yeah. Down there, I mean, if it's this hot in Toronto, I can't imagine what it would be like in Virginia.
Rollins appears on the screen and says that Cody tried to steal his spotlight at WrestleMania, then cheated at Backlash to win. Now you want Hell in a Cell, and you might be more stupid than you look. Anyone that has stepped into the cell with me has changed forever. He accepts the match, and he's going to expose Cody for the fraud he is. And Cody says, I'll see you in hell.
I thought it was a great promo from Cody.
I thought it was a really great setup for it. Pandemonium purgatory aside, I thought this was a very straightforward set up to a match. We didn't have to work in silly comedy to this. It was just like, here is the big blow off match that we are establishing. The crowd reacted to Hell in a Cell as meaningful and does feel like the main event of this show in the absence of a big Roman Reigns match, that this feels like the big match for whenever that pay-per-view is in a couple of weeks, June 5th.
Yeah. I thought, you know, we've had a few weeks now of Cody not really speaking a whole lot, it feels. So to finally have him come out here and actually, like, give us an extended promo, one that was counted down to, no less, for 2 whole hours, I thought it lived up to the countdown. You know, it was a countdown-worthy promo here because he sounded great. He stated his kind of deeply rooted resentment of Rollins dating back to 2012 and talked about how, you know, his losses helped him become the person he is today. To me, it was like the best version of a Cody promo where it was not too confusing. And this is what I've always been curious to see, like in a WWE setting, will there be that editing to perhaps, you know, take out some of the two inside references that honestly bogged down a lot of his promos from probably becoming very good promos while he was in AEW. I didn't really notice anything in there. You know, it was just the right.
He comes off to me the same kind of
better though.
Promo style as he did in AEW. I think sometimes we focus more on the negative Cody promos in AEW when he had a lot of stellar ones. Like his delivery to me has always been very good. I think it's more so some of the content that we remember. He also had some very good promos there.
Oh yeah, the delivery is great, but yeah, no, the criticism has always just been him being too confusing. You know, like talking about shit and trying to seed feuds with other participant members of the roster that he was not going to be anywhere near. And I, you know, like instead though, when we're talking about a promo like this, the only kind of like hardcore references are like, you know, allusions to him painting his face or how, instead of the American dream, he could be the American nightmare. I did notice like one line that I wondered if it was a more subtle shot here. And that was a line about how he said he learned the difference between being a revolutionary interview and an actual he learned the difference between revolutionary interviews and actual revolutionary actions. And I wondered, you know, just because it stems from a previous mention in one of his AEW promos, I mean, is there a more revolutionary interview in recent memory than the pipe bomb? In one of his criticisms in one of his latest AEW promos was how he realized CM Punk's pipe bomb sort of a manifesto, whereas he actually took action where Punk did not. So I wondered if that was just a bit more of a subtle shot. But anyway, it's interesting. You know, we could still have fun and maybe look into some of the content here. But overall, this was a far less confusing and still very good sounding Cody promo.
I think he could have really rounded the promo out by talking about tumbling class in NXT.
Tumbling, yes.
Yes, that Red Dragon program we never got with Cody. So we go to the back. Schreiber is with Asuka, who just cries like a baby impersonating Becky Lynch, and she's going to give her a reason to cry tonight. She's ready for the Raw Women's title.
I mean, I just had a thought, but like they would have known that this match wasn't happening at the start of the show, right? The six woman match,
in theory, yeah. If
didn't they said, leave hours ago,
like, they said the timeline they said was 8 hours before the match. So we're talking like what, like five to six hours before showtime that they left. So
in either case, like they didn't have to show that opening graphic if they knew that. Like, because did they even announce this at any point during?
I can't say 100% they didn't announce it on the site or something earlier.
Even if they did announce it on the site. We've seen them just go against that, like on their TV by showing us a different match. Like they didn't have to show that graphic. Did they just show it because they had to weave in the references to them leaving with their unprofessionally throughout the show?
Listen, they could have gone around this many different ways that did not involve throwing Naomi and Sasha out there and making reference to this story. They could have avoided it, and they opted not to do. They opted to do not just the opposite, the polar opposite when it comes to acknowledging that Sasha Banks and Naomi are walked out as opposed to, oh, there was some kind of injury or whatever. They could have gone about it a million different ways, and I would not have guessed they would have gone to the extent of putting out that press release as they worded it. They went so far in the other direction of what would be typical.
Only thing that was missing from that press release was some version of taking their ball and going home.
Well, this generation's taking your ball and going home is now going to be summarily and unprofessionally left the arena. They summarily.
Much yes. Bigger mouthful.
Yeah. Chad Gable and Ezekiel with Kevin Owens on commentary. Kevin Owens is like, he's almost too good on commentary because I am just completely focused on Kevin Owens. I think he is just hilarious with these guys. He constantly is calling anyone who calls him Ezekiel a liar, and he would correct them every time they said Ezekiel. He just said Elias, and they put up the photo of Elias and Ezekiel together. He says that's doctored, and then Jimmy Smith has a. To me, an actual slip up calling him Elias, and Kevin just pounces on it, noting that, see, even you know, and then says, you were the same one that said that Cody hadn't wrestled in 6 years. That was equally ridiculous. So this guy's paying close attention. Ezekiel uses a gory special and Gable escapes with a sunset flip roll up. Gable then targets the arm, comes off the top into the returning symphony that does not have a name for Ezekiel, adopting the move of his brother. Chaos Theory gets blocked. Then he lands a moonsault off the top. Ezekiel kicks out of that. And then Ezekiel splashes him in the corner. There's a knee that sends Otis off the apron. And they kind of rolled through here and just seemed to be... They were going for a Mahistral cradle. And then on the second try, got it. And it was countered by Ezekiel, who covered Gable to get the win.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I loved when, like, how after Kevin Owens leaves the commentary desk, Corey admits to the other two commentators that he was just lying, going along with Kevin because he was worried about him. So everybody is like in on it, and Kevin Owens is the only one who's crazy. I found it really amusing. You know, they're getting a whole lot more mileage out of this Ezekiel Elias thing than I ever imagined. And to me, it's still entertaining, very much so because of the performances of the four people that are attached to this in Alpha Academy and Ezekiel slash Elias and Kevin Owens. He's been great on commentary. I thought the match was pretty good too, actually, between Gable and Elias. Sorry, Ezekiel.
Yeah, come on, Way. I was pretty down on this character at the beginning. Last week, when Kevin Owens revealed himself to not be his brother Ken, but Kevin, and Ezekiel's reaction, it might have been one of the best things I've seen of the Elias character. Like, his reaction to that was priceless, and it has grabbed me even. And I've been much more down on this angle than I think most, to be quite honest. I think I am more in the minority, but the performances have been pretty entertaining.
I think the turning point for you was probably Pat LaPrade's photo.
Oh, dude, that thing was incredible. Yeah, if you didn't see this, he took he had a photo of himself with Kevin Owens at his wedding, and he photoshopped another Kevin Owens and changed the color of his tie. And dude, this photo looked tremendous.
Photoshop? What are you talking about?
This you're right. Here. I was making a baseless accusation there.
Yeah, I'll throw it up at some point for the people that are
that might have been
video.
The turning point. You are right.
Yeah.
R-Truth and Tamina. This is a storyline I think I've been consistent on for the last 3 years. It's been awful. R-Truth and Tamina are trying to find Akira Tozawa. And last week we were talking about, well, they've taken the dynamic of the 24/7 title, and now I can't talk over this. This is just, look at it. Like, there's at least half a second of, like, look, they even have the crease. It's just, it's tremendous. It is just terrific.
It's a great Photoshop. Yeah. I mean, if it is a Photoshop, I don't even know at this point.
No, I mean, look at that.
Look at two different colored ties, you know? How did he get the arm? How did he? Why is Pat's hand on one guy and not the other?
That's a really good, like, job.
To be real.
Like, this is really well done.
I think it's real. All right.
So I thought we were going to get like a long stretch of searching for Tozawa, much like they searched for the 24/7 champion. But now we're trying to deliver divorce papers. Well, Truth knows where Akira Tozawa would hide. He opens up a trash can, throws the papers in, and Tozawa comes out of the trash can where he's presumably been all day. He has now been served with divorce papers. Dana Brooke then comes in and thanks Truth for serving Reggie with papers. He wants the 24/7 title back, but she shoves him away and runs off straight into Carmella, who is just standing there. She apologizes, and Carmella says that she is a sorry excuse for a competitor and a sorry excuse for a wife. Unlike you, my husband can't get enough of me, and I'm relevant. So Dana responds that the last time you were relevant was when the chinless guy was here. A James Ellsworth reference. If you didn't think the tag titles had been disparaged enough, man, calling your former champion irrelevant since 2017, that you just forget about your tag champions who held it for how long this year? And adds that Corey Graves couldn't cut it. Truth runs in, reuniting with Carmella on screen, and Carmella agrees to help Truth win the 24/7 title, but she wants to get her hands on Dana Brooke. All of these different combinations that they set up, I have negative interest in. Every last one.
I mean, it's the 24/7 division, you know, like how much interest did you have to begin with, right? I found it interesting how she brought up Corey, like, throughout all this. And I mean, Corey is an integral part of the Carmella character at this point. But It kind of makes me wonder if, like, you know, those rumors about Corey wanting to jump back into wrestling, are they setting up a Corey return in the 24/7 division?
I mean, him being cleared is, like, he has confirmed that. He is cleared. There's nothing stopping them from doing a match with him, and it's, I would say, more so just coming up with a reason to do it. And he's got a pretty great gig as it is now. But certainly that option's open. And I would imagine at some point the timing will be right to do something with Corey, and whether it be a mixed tag, like, that would seem to make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might be something that they're setting up with this. We shall see. At this point, like, you know, with the Carmella character, it has been more comedic and more kind of like fitting with this cast of characters than actual real competitors anyway. So I have absolutely no issues with her involved in the 24/7 division. It might actually, you know, freshen things up just a little bit. I love the fact that there were callbacks to Ellsworth and also her relationship with R-Truth here. You know, like, this was like a Carmella, this is your life here in this little segment. And it was almost a little amusing seeing, you know, Carmella not be so friendly to R-Truth and having to, you know, work, having R-Truth basically to kind of, you know, work for her.
I thought they were literally, it was going to freeze and the music was going to play with the two of them. And Carmella doesn't go along with it.
You know, that might be a spot for the match.
Okay. Then the segment that, everyone is just going to be watching with every ounce of analysis. Lacey Evans comes out. She is introduced. And she comes out, she's slapping hands, and gets into the ring, and notes how she respects the men and women of our armed forces. Now get up off your butt and give them a round of applause. And the crowd does, they chant USA. She thanks them for the warm welcome she was given on Raw, and mentions the servicemen in the crowd, thanking them again, and states that finding the courage to fight is hard. She wants to show her baby girls that we can do it. We have what it takes to wake up, work, and win. And there's no one is better than me in the locker room. Sorry. How does this phrase go at the end? I have it all jumbled up here. The same catchphrase she always uses.
It doesn't make me better than any of those people in the locker room.
But they're damn sure not better than me.
Yes, yes.
Something like that. Totally mangled by me, but nonetheless. Yes.
Everybody was curious about how the WWE was going to handle this. You know, this comes off of several weeks of vignettes followed by two very confusing live introductions. And we've since learned that, you know, many of the verbiage that was used for those weird introductions were done exactly as is. This was, I think, the first time we got to see her speak at length in front of a crowd, and was going to give us a great sense of the direction of where the character was going to go after reports that, you know, she is indeed classified as a heel. This was about as baby face of a promo as you can get through and through. Almost, I mean, you know, really just kind of relying a lot on her military background. The whole promo was essentially, let's give it up for our servicemen and women. And it was the type of promo that really was impossible to boo. And no indication
whatsoever. And no one did. No one did. I mean, yeah. At best, and you're really grasping at straws, is just a line about telling the fans to get up off their butts and cheer these servicemen. It's like
nothing heelish about that, I don't think.
Yeah, you really can't read the,
nothing at all. This to me almost felt like they were shifting back course after they realized, what the fuck are we doing trying to turn this person heel?
And that's the other part of, regardless of where this was designed to go, you have a baby face that the audience is responding to. Like, in both times that they have brought her out in front of the crowds, they have had a positive reception to her. She's a good promo. Like, you have a baby face here, and they are not plentiful in this company. So, yeah. Unless this is just, you know, they're going to go with this direction and then eventually shoot an angle with her. Like, I think you do
How
have some.
How can you shoot an angle with somebody? Like, well, not in the immediate aftermath of this, maybe talking 2-3, like 6 months after this, then sure. But in the immediate aftermath of thanking the veterans in the crowd, to have this person in any way associated with a heel act would be very distasteful. And I don't think WWE themselves, if there's one thing that they're very respectful of, is their relationship with the army or the military. I don't think they would. I don't think she's going heel at all after this.
Yeah, if you remember, I believe it was 2011. It was right around WrestleMania time, and there was a house show, mm-hmm. and they were playing the national anthem, and they did a segment where I can't remember who the heel was.
Miz
interrupts the anthem, and there was so much internal heat on the company for this. Finley ended up being the fall guy for that and got fired just because of that spot. And, you know, with their partnerships and such, it's like that is a territory they do not want to be treading around. So, it makes this character, I think, kind of the center of everyone's attention of where it is going. But yeah, this very much felt like a babyface presentation tonight.
It was 100%. Like, I'd go as far as to say this confirms it, and this makes the questionable announcements and introductions from the previous weeks even that much more confusing. Because if we didn't have that one line of, ladies and gentlemen, Lacey Evans has requested you to stand up and applaud. Like, if that never happened, I don't think we'd be questioning any of this. But because that did, because Corey had that weird line last Monday, it all throws everything out of whack, but it seems like they might be shifting back, you know, directions to make her a full-on babyface.
Riddle and the Usos cut promo setting up Friday. Then we got the announcement of the Almighty Challenge with MVP and Omos next week. That's the only thing announced for Raw in Evansville, Indiana next week. And the main event is Asuka and Becky Lynch with Bianca Belair seated at ringside. This wasn't long enough, I think, to really be the match I'm sure these two envisioned having, they got into the ring and it was like almost 10 minutes left in the show. There's a leg drop to Asuka while she was draped on the middle rope. And then there's a counter to the Asuka lock, a counter to the manhandle slam. And then Lynch is caught in a flying armbar. She gets out of it and then gets into Bianca's face on the floor, running Asuka into Bianca. And then she's goading Belair, who gets onto the apron. The referee is dealing with Belair. So Becky grabs Asuka's umbrella and goes to hit her when Asuka hits her with the mist in the face and pins Becky Lynch. Afterwards, first of all, they showed the replay of the green mist in slow motion. It looked tremendous. The way Becky sold it was great. But the best part was this referee who turns around. He not only counts three. Then he grabs a towel for Becky to clean herself off of this green mist. Not at all is this referee concerned about what happened here. What happened? Where is all this this green residue?
He didn't see it.
He was so worried about Bianca getting involved that here this woman has been blinded by this mist, and he is literally helping clean her up. But decision stands. Asuka is your winner, and we'll take on Bianca Belair.
She could have fallen into the mist herself. You know, you didn't see who the culprit was that put it on.
I guess this is open-ended enough that if Asuka and Becky was the direction for Hell in a Cell and Becky is the odd woman out, could she work her way into this match based off this mist finish? Because she would apparently not have an opponent. So
she could have lost the match and still have found her way into the match if that's what they wanted to do. I don't think they should, because it would render this match completely pointless. You know, and I wouldn't want that. Like, have Becky do something else. You know, give her
Lacey Evans. Program's with Asuka, though. Like, you're doing something really cold I don't think they want to extinguish this feud with Asuka either.
That's fine. Yeah, put it on hold. You know, she can get involved in the main event. But, like, I just don't like it when you promote something as a number one contenders match. You'll go through the trouble of devising a finish, and then you just kind of go back on it the next week. To me, it just kind of, like, why would I pay attention to a number one contenders match the next time? It's pointless, right? Anyway, I thought, considering all the drama that probably took place in the back in the creation of this main event, I thought these two did a great job. Like, it was fast paced from the beginning. It was exciting. There were a number of really clever and well executed near falls and counters and submissions. And I thought they came out with the finish that was satisfying, but was still protective of Becky from taking a major defeat. So it's the type of match where they can revisit in the future, maybe after this pay-per-view, if they wanted to continue the feud. But for a Band-Aid solution, essentially, to something that was kind of out of their control, I think Asuka versus, you know, Belair is that, I mean, it's a better match than what they had initially planned with Naomi, even though that probably would have been good too.
So there you go. A Raw that there was way more discussion about what didn't happen on the show versus what did happen on the program. And coming out, we have, I guess, two matches now for Hell in a Cell with Cody and Seth, and tentatively Asuka challenging Bianca Belair for June the 5th in Chicago.
Two attractive matches, I have to say. Even though, like, you know, like, it's been a completely one-sided feud in Seth versus Cody, we kind of know the deal. Like, it's, it, I mean, Cody shouldn't be taking losses, but we also really enjoy the in-ring content. Hell in a Cell is enough, I would say, of a sort of elevation of the feud to make me interested in it again.
The biggest question, though, Wei, on a show where you literally had a countdown clock, did WWE drop the ball, in a figurative sense, by not scripting their buzzer beater moment?
That's a, you know, what would they be beating, though? I mean, the buzzer beater moment really is every day at 11 o'clock when they're supposed to go off air and you still have, you know, live TV and a match going on, right?
If there's one thing wrestling fans love, it's clocks and counting down from 10.
Oh, yeah. We're
put a clock. We're excited. People getting ejected and clocks, that is the DNA of a wrestling fan.
I mean, the whole Rumble is based on off of clocks. Yeah, we're just, you see a number going down from 10 to 0, and I'm focused on it. Yeah.
All right. Let's dive into some feedback, see if any chats are of the super variety.
Some of them are, actually. We thank you guys, of course, as always, for your support. Anytime we stream live here at youtube.com/postwrestling, you guys can send a super chat or a super sticker in support of the channel and to ask a question. And first of all, we go to David Rodriguez, who sends $2. Thank you for the support, David. He asks, any word on a much-needed Bayley return?
No, not in terms of a timetable. Like, the injury happened last July, so you're looking at for a torn ACL. Like, we're in that ballpark, I would say, and I would imagine that it's going to be not too much longer of a delay, but also finding like the best timing for it as well to bring her back.
I'll tell you what, I mean, I think that return date, the need for Bayley has probably been sped up way ahead after tonight, you know.
Possible. I mean, it's a huge question that we can't answer tonight regarding the futures of Sasha Banks and Naomi, of like, what is this going to be a blip in the relationship? Things are smoothed over and we just go back to put everything back on course in the next week. Is this going to be something more sustainable? And you're potentially looking at two significant stars at the moment that are not going to be on your programming for indefinitely. Certainly.
Also, I mean, tag team titles that are up for grabs, and not to say that that's ever a big draw for this company, but if they are in need of a match, I mean, maybe we get some sort of, you know, impromptu vacant championship situation happening at the pay-per-view, or maybe even a tournament, but I can't imagine how many people they have available for something like that. Maybe they'll just retire these belts from this point on.
I can't see them getting rid of them, but I understand where that sentiment comes. I will say, like, the more I think about it, like, that line in the press release about, like, the two people, the two unnamed people, like, that to me is just such a vindictive line that is put in there because that is going to create friction in the women's locker room. Mm-hmm. And that is just, like, throwing just throwing blood in the water to me of, even if they come back, you can now deal with this, which was probably a private conversation that they have now publicized to the world in that statement, and left it with the guesswork of people that are reading about that statement and wondering, of the four, who are they referring to and who those two people are. Like, how are they going to feel if they're reading about that for the first time? I mean, there's just so much about that line that to me was completely should not have been publicized.
Yes. We go to Bad Vera, who sends 2,500 Chilean pesos, who asks, do you guys think this could be the point of no return between Sasha and WWE?
It's hard to say. I don't know what the length is of her deal, but that typically does not work out well for a performer. If you have X amount of time left on your contract and you're just going to sit on the sidelines, we have seen in the past, they have that ability to just freeze someone's contract. And that just becomes a very tiresome exercise for the performer. Again, it goes back to who holds the leverage in these situations. It is typically the company and not the performer. So I would say for her sake, if you are a fan of Sasha Banks, I don't think you would be rooting for an impasse where her career is just on hold because of a contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, this could be a situation where it's just things got heated today, and within a week, things are smoothed over, because logically, I think for all parties, it would make the most sense that they resolve this problem instead of it becoming something bigger. And you have two talents that are on the sidelines, frozen. But mm-hmm. there was, you know, there may be some very upset individuals based on how it was handled tonight on both sides.
I have to imagine maybe some late phone calls or maybe late night meetings are happening now between some higher ups and these two, just to kind of maybe, you know, sort this thing out before it gets any worse. It's become so public now that I think it's going to perhaps take a little bit more than it would have if it was just kept private. And I don't think there's ever a point of no return when you're talking about Vince McMahon. Like, we're talking about a guy who, you know, has brought in every single one of his enemies back into the fold at some point or another. And, you know, you also have to look at what the other options are for somebody like Sasha. Obviously, there's a lot that's out there for somebody like her. Outside of professional wrestling, I mean, her acting career could potentially be very strong. Her career as any sort of personality. She's somebody who I can honestly say probably doesn't necessarily need wrestling now, but you know, she loves it. And with the contract being what it is, I mean, she's not going to be working for any competitors without a big legal battle. So, I see her ultimately jumping back into the fold with the WWE, and the WWE will be, of course, happy to have her. They're one of her, like, their big IPs that they own. Right. So I think it's in their best interest to patch things up. Let's go to Fact Channel, who sends another $2. Thank you so much, Fact Channel. He says, I started watching F1 because of y'all. Thanks. Well, you're welcome. I'm so glad you're into it. It's race week this week, John.
That's right. Where are they this weekend?
It's the Spanish Grand Prix. And then next week, it's Monaco. So 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, boy. Monaco. Yeah, this is I've heard like Monaco. It's like a.
It's a street. It's a legendary street track. And
yes,
it's
yeah.
Very tight, these roads. And these cars have only gotten bigger. So it's very difficult to maneuver. They say there's not much overtaking that's involved. But, I mean, part of the appeal is to see, like, whether or not people can properly navigate and finish the race, it seems.
Yeah. I heard, like, Ferrari might have something up their sleeve this weekend. They might have some big plans for Red Bull.
Is that right? What's that?
Yes.
What's the plan?
Some kind of upgrade.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The plot thickens. Dude, when I was out with friends on Saturday, I was like, bring up F1. Dude, they all follow it.
Not a big surprise. Like, it's honestly, I feel like we're actually late.
Most of them through Drive to Survive. But like one of my friends, he's been like a hardcore follower for like years and years and years. So it's like, we're kind of like the hipsters just jumping on the bandwagon. But
of course.
Yeah, it's just interesting.
What does your friend think? I'm kind of curious of like all these people that are watching something that was so niche to him.
He certainly did position it of like, yeah, I was watching way back. Now it's the cool thing, which I think you do get a little bit of that bragging rights when you were, you know, discovering.
Can you imagine if like people were coming up to us in parties and like being like, hey, what did you think of the quarter hours yesterday? You know, like
I will as a public service announcement. If you ever see me at a party, please do not come up to me and talk about anything wrestling related. It is my soul dies.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Any more thoughts on everything else that's been going on?
Are we moving on from F1?
I guess so. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like just leaving that open ended about F1. Well, we do have some forum feedback as well that I want to read here. Alexander from Portland writes, a fine show tonight. Alexa getting a new theme sounds nice, but Lily still being a part of the gimmick doesn't bode well. Omos and Lashley was an okay match, a fair ending to keep both men looking good. I'm not upset at the main event shenanigans, but why were Sasha and Naomi, two SmackDown stars, given a title opportunity on Raw? Yeah, the question that we never have gotten to tonight, Way. How did two SmackDown SmackDown stars get an opportunity on Raw? I don't know, Alexander. The brand split is like, come on. It is what it is. I applaud the two for standing up against bad booking, especially since their lack of involvement on this show seemed more newsworthy than anything that happened on it. Silver lining of the show with Kevin Owens, he's entertaining in any role he's been put in.
Okay, very cool. Sorry, would you mind just handling the next one, John? I'm just kind of reading this update.
Brian is in New Jersey and writes, Balor and Styles, too sweet, and Liv Morgan at a house show over the weekend took over some of my Twitter timeline. It caught my eye. It had me wondering if they were going to do it on Raw, and they did, only for my reaction to it being muted because of the overwhelming story of Sasha and Naomi. And what an insane statement from WWE. Nevertheless, fun stuff from Styles and Balor against Los Lotharios, the cage match, and Kevin Owens. Thank you, Brian, for the feedback. So there you have it. And that is going to wind down the show.
Yeah,
a wild one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So somebody in the chat room just are pointing out that Fightful posted an update. I believe I read it, and it's not necessarily anything that I don't think we've not mentioned so far. So we'll find out a whole lot more, I'm sure, about this sometime tomorrow for the post news update at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I would say, like, just the way things were stated tonight on the WWE side, I'm very curious to see Sasha Banks and Naomi, that I would feel would want to get their side out. We will see. Maybe they don't want to comment on it, but I mean, they were really putting a role to respond to this.
Well, do they have the ability to? I mean, and because now they have to be careful about what they say without the approval of the company.
I don't know. If I was put in that situation and I'm reading that statement online about me, yeah. I'm not too worried about how I respond.
If you don't care about further burning that bridge. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, what are you talking about? I mean, it's whether they feel like they want their side represented or not.
Yeah. Well, any sort of response coming from them privately will be to refute, I would think, you know, much of what was said in the WWE response, and that'll just kind of continue to further tensions. So,
or maybe not. Maybe they'll just put out a statement. WWE, a press release, nailed it.
The two people that we had issues with were
summarily.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to wind down the show. We'll be back Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. If there are any developments on this story, we will kick off the show recapping that. Mark Paulusel from C4 Wrestling is going to be on with us. We'll also go through the SmackDown and Rampage numbers, Cain Velasquez being denied bail, and all the other news items going on in the world of wrestling. Go check out postwrestling.com, postwrestlingcafe.com. Sign up and you get multiple bonus shows per week, including Tuesday night's Rewind Away, number 110, as we are going to have an extensive look at Thursday, Raw Thursday from February of 1997, where Shawn Michaels gave up the WWF Championship in a wild and turbulent time in the history of the World Wrestling Federation.
I'm off to watch it now.
Good night.